from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on February 9th when British journalist Felix Salmon wrote a piece called To All the Young Journalists Asking for Advice. On Twitter, there had been an ongoing hashtagged conversation focusing on advice for young journalists. Salmon offered his advice in an extended piece. Essentially, he said, don't do it. Get out. Find another career. It was more thoughtful than that, of course. Salmon wrote, quote, the obstacles facing you are much greater than anything I managed to overcome. I'm not saying that now is a bad time for journalism. In fact, I'm a golden ager. I'm constantly astonished by the quality and quantity of the material being produced today. And I think this is probably the greatest era for journalism that the world's ever seen. But that doesn't mean life is good for journalists. In fact, life is not good for journalists. And while a couple of years ago I harbored hopes that things might improve, those hopes have now pretty much evaporated. Things are not only bad, they are going to get worse, end quote. Salmon's piece sparked a wider conversation about the future of journalism and who gets into it, whether young journalists should jump ship now. Ezra Klein is the 30-year-old founder of Vox.com. He offered a rebuttal, writing, quote, the death of journalism is a favorite topic of many older writers, and for good reason. The industry is undergoing a wrenching and unusual transformation, and that's made it very tough to be midway up the old ladder. But that same transition has also created a lot of new opportunities for journalists who are just starting out. To give just a few examples, Vox, The Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, and Politico didn't exist as recently as a few years ago, and now we hire tons of young journalists, end quote. So I wanted to know, what do Rochester journalists say about the future of our industry? What is their advice to young journalists? My guests for the hour, Gary Craig with the Democrat and Chronicle. Gary, nice to see you.
Thanks, Evan.
Also here from the Democrat and Chronicle is Justin Murphy. Justin, hello.
Hi, Evan.
Carlette Claire is back in her old digs. She's with 13 Wham News now, but we let her back in the building. You spent how many years at WXXI?
Six.
6 years. Well, I hope you're enjoying life at my old digs. Carlette and I swapped places.
Yes, we did. And I'm loving it over there.
Well, it's so nice to see you here. And Veronica Volk is my, I think you're still technically my newest colleague at WXXI in the newsroom.
Yes, I am.
Nice to see you as well.
Thanks for bringing me in.
All right, let me start. We're going to go around the table. And Gary, only because not that you're the oldest, you're the most seasoned. What's your advice for young journalists? You read Felix Salmon's piece. You read Ezra Klein's rebuttal. Whose side do you see yourself falling more on?
Well, first, I thought I was included on a panel of young journalists because of my age. But no, let's face it, I've been doing this a while, 30-some years now. And I think one thing holds true today as it did then is if you're looking for sort of a wealth and, you know, with your livelihood, and it's not necessarily the route you're going to go. The money's not terrible, but it's not always going to be great. The hours can be trying sometimes. But the flip side of that is, you know, the same things that drove us, I think, all into the business were sort of curiosity, intellectual curiosity, a love for good storytelling, the ability to ask strangers questions that nobody else in the world would dare ask them. I mean, all those things are still there. And there's it's both sort of, I think in many ways, an exciting time for the business and a frightening time for the business. The excitement being there's just so much more, so many platforms, so many ways to distribute the content now. But there's also sort of this unsure, obviously, financial footing beneath us all, which, you know, is part of the reason I think people are a little uncertain about where we're going.
Would you tell people not worth it, too risky, get out? Or would you say simply understand what the landscape is?
The latter. I mean, I get asked this question and, you know, and I say, you know, if you have that sort of inner drive that got you into the business in the first place, that's going to keep you in the business, go for it. I sort of, you know, tell them of the warning signs, you know, what I think, you know, the shortfalls can be with the business. But I think if it's just something that you love doing, you know, what more can you want out of a career or something you love doing?
Justin Murphy is also with the Democrat and Chronicle. He's been there for slightly less time than Gary. And when you talk to young students, young journalism aspirants, what would you tell them?
Well, it wasn't that long ago for me. I went to journalism school at Syracuse. I graduated in 2010, when I got in 2009, that was kind of the nadir of the hand-wringing and the economic downturn and everything like that. That was as bad a time maybe as you could have gotten in. And for me, that was 5 years ago. I've got a job. It's as stable as such a job can be. I can pay the bills, that sort of thing. I would agree with Felix Salmon's piece when he said, if there's something else that you really like, something else that would be interesting to you and you could make a career, and then do that. And like Gary said, I think that's probably always been true. I think that a lot of the angst over this question of journalism is there's a few misreadings of the situation. First of all, that the current moment in journalism is fundamentally different from any other moment, because the for as long as the media and particularly newspapers have existed, these changes have been going on almost generationally. The first newspapers were highly partisan. They had way more ads than the current ones do. And frankly, they were boring. They were pages and pages of congressional testimonies, things that we would never think to read anymore. The DNC, when Frank Gannett came to town in the beginning part of the century, there was maybe half a dozen, seven newspapers, and in only a few years it went down to two. So it's not new that journalism is at a moment. Journalism's kind of always been at a moment. And journalism is also not unique among any other professions. I think that just while we are concerned about what our industry is going to look like in 20 years, I think anybody in any line of work who's being honest with themselves would have that same question. So it's not like everybody else is on solid ground and we're kind of foolishly risking our livelihoods. That's kind of the way it is. We're doing more work now. We're tied to our phones like everybody else. So I would say if that's what you enjoy and if you can't see your way clear to do anything else, then there's no reason not to be a journalist.
I think it's good perspective. I mean, you think about careers that are sort of coasting in perpetuity, and I don't mean coasting because they're easy, but coasting in that there's very little change. Maybe teaching Spanish, but even then, the platforms to teach and the expectations, there's always change. And I think that perspective is a good one. I'm getting from the print reporters in the room the idea that if your love is journalism, if you are driven by it as a passion, don't feel chased out, that you can still carve out a career. If you have other interests and journalism seems like it might be fun, but it doesn't drive you, maybe think about everything first. Justin, yes?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Gary?
Wholeheartedly, I'd agree with that.
All right. Carlette Claire is at 13 WHAM TV, and you've made the transition now from radio journalism to television journalism, which is an interesting one.
Yes.
What are you finding in your career at 13 WHAM, and do you feel, you know, solid, stable? Are you happy you're there?
I'm happy there. I got into journalism because, as Gary was mentioning, love for storytelling, asking people questions, hard questions. I mean, as a journalist, you are kind of like that fifth layer of government. You're checking officials and making sure that they're honest. You're fact-checking. You're being the voice for the community. So the foundation of that remains consistent, whether you're, I think, in print or radio or public or commercial television. I totally agree, I think, with Ezra that if you have a passion for it, then you have to follow it. So I would never discourage anyone to go after journalism, even though we don't know what it looks like and the landscape is going to change. But I think if that's where your heart is, you have to follow it.
Yeah, I agree. I remember being in 13 WHAM newsroom and seeing students come in, shadows come in, interns come in. And so there got to a point, I think about 5 years ago, where interns would come to my desk and they'd say, everyone here says this is not a smart career move. You know, and I said, I don't think that's true. I don't think everyone was saying that. But they're hearing the realities of the business.
Sure.
I always told them hard work still wins.
It does.
But it must be fueled by real passion as opposed to, you know, there's always going to be an element of people who are in any business for what someone might describe as a nebulous kind of wrong reason, or, you know, being on television is fun or whatever it is. I don't think there's a whole lot of that in television. I think that's a bit of a misunderstanding. But if that is any part of alluring to you, you're probably doing the wrong thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, being on television is probably, what, 5% of what you do, or 10%?
Of your time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the very last
20%
thing.
20% of my time was applying foundation and bronzer. I mean, I spent more time applying the makeup than actually being on the air.
Right. Those, you know, the other cosmetic things that you have to make sure that your appearance is one way. But, I mean, the one thing is making sure you're getting out there and you're working hard. You're getting the interviews. You're talking to the community. You're figuring out what's important. if you're going into it, obviously for the money and the looks of it, broadcasting is not for you.
I think people are generally shocked to find out what journalists make, but that maybe is another hour. I think it's probably related to the conversation. I think the ceilings are lower than they used to be, it's fair to say. It's not that you can't make a living, it's that the ceilings are probably lower. Veronica Volk with WXXI News, and when you were thinking about your own career, why journalism for you?
Well, of course, full disclosure, I am the newest at this.
Yes.
So I think I come from an interesting perspective just because I've always been in audio. And we are at a time right now where I feel like audio is incredibly, you know, expanding at this really rapid pace. You have podcasts getting a lot of attention and you have, you know, public radio getting a lot more prestige than it used to. And not being a print journalist, I never had to see, you know, my coworkers and friends laid off in droves, which is the experience of a lot more of a different kind of journalist than I am. So I am just ceaselessly optimistic, possibly to a fault. I didn't go to journalism school per se. Actually, I kind of fell into it through a series of internships and writing or, you know, just varying circumstances. But I couldn't imagine at this point doing anything else. And I will say, to the point where if you're not sure about journalism, don't do it, I might disagree with that. I think we are at a point where journalism can use, you know, a vast array of different people with different perspectives. Maybe your thing is you are really good at connecting with an online audience, or maybe you're really good at making visuals, or maybe in my case, you're really good at producing audio. Journalism is a great way for you to tell stories and maybe find, you know, something that you love to do in the process.
If you want to join the conversation, we'd love to hear from you and what you think the future of journalism and the news media is. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. As Gary Craig said before we started the hour, 10 years ago, you wouldn't have thought that everyone would be reading your stories on their phone every day. The world's changed.
Yeah, I mean, that's I talked to journalism classes, as we were saying earlier. You get the inevitable question. So, you know, so what's the business going to be like in 15 years? And, you know, my hope is obviously still that people can make a career out of it if they so choose or not. But as far as just sort of the delivery of content, as I said, you know, I couldn't have predicted, I didn't predict, I think, I don't know who did, that my stories are going to be read on the phone, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I wouldn't have been telling that to classes. And while we're constantly trying, I think, to look into the future, to be ahead of it instead of behind it, as we've so frequently been in the last, you know, decade or so. It's I don't know if any of us have really mastered how to do that, how to figure out what the future is going to hold for this business.
So who wants to make a prediction? 10 years from now, we'll save this recording. What's the medium that we're not using now? I mean, that's the fascinating thing. And that's, for me, is very difficult. Who knows if this broadcast is going to be on AM radio? It won't in perpetuity, and it may not, you know, for who knows how long.
But I mean, you're saying, I mean, what's interesting is sometimes what old is new, and sort of, you know, I think for a while, I know we experimented with audio for a while, and then it wasn't doing as well on our site, not talking about radio so much, but on our site. But now audio, as you said, is back, and it's very popular, and the podcasts are very popular. It even some things sometimes that you think have sort of gone the way, talking about more sort of the podcast type thing, they seem to make this resurgent return. And it's really hard to not only figure out what the new medium may be, but sort of to get a handle on what can sort of the old medium that might still find its way back.
We also have some interesting comments from a number of different sources about J-schools. And from the five journalists in this room, only two out of the five here, two of us went to a journalism school. I went to the prestigious E.W. Scripps School of Journalism at Ohio University, and I joke, that's tongue-in-cheek. I think it might be prestigious, but I went to OU. Justin, you went to Syracuse.
That's right.
The rest of the room did not go to journalism school. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So, Veronica, what was your degree?
I graduated from Fordham University with a degree in communication and media studies.
Okay. When in the process did you figure out you really wanted to do what you're doing now?
Like I said, it was by accident. Fordham has a really great public radio station out of there, WFUV, and I got an internship there. And I've always really wanted to tell stories anyway, so it kind of fit. I mean, I have an origin story for my career in journalism if I need it in the future, so.
Okay, but not a J school. Gary Craig, not a J school. Your degree was what?
English, so I was really at a loss as to what to do for a career. I mean, I just grew up loving to write, and it, you know, what I found out as I did college newspaper in college, then went into newspaper right out of college. And I have to admit, I even as slim as it was, I kind of got used to getting paid on a regular basis versus trying to be the great American novelist and not getting paid on a regular basis. And what I found out while doing that was I actually probably loved the reporting end even as much or more as the writing end. I mean, I'm a person that has a hard time. I have to tie myself to the desk sometime to write the story because I can continue reporting forever.
The news gathering part you love.
Exactly. And that just, I found that out by actually getting into the business. I didn't really know when I got into the business that was going to be the part that was so appealing to me. But I found that out because I wanted a job where I was writing, and then the newspaper gave me that.
And isn't that interesting? Every newsroom you've ever worked in, you could point to somebody who, if you need to get hard interview, that person can get it. If you want to point to somebody who's a fabulous writer, that person can write a lead better than anybody. It's amazing the different things that you don't know that you love until you do it. I mean, Veronica was talking about your own experiences that you kind of discovered along the way. You love storytelling. Here you are in radio. Gary, you figure out you love the news gathering. Thank goodness you can tie yourself to your desk to actually write and produce it. Creature of deadline, perhaps.
By
necessity.
yeah, deadlines being the necessity. I mean, I was like that in college. I was the guy that was starting the term paper at midnight the night before. So I've learned to respect deadlines more than I used to.
It's funny. The night before was not enough of a deadline. I started the morning of.
Oh, there you go.
That's when that was
the night before.
I was putting on dot matrix printers, by the way, which is...
Exactly.
I don't even know what that is.
Let's go. I've got a bus to catch. Carla, Claire, what was your educational background?
I graduated from St. John Fisher College with a communication and journalism degree.
So it's a journalism degree.
Yes.
You said you didn't go to J school.
Well, I did.
Hold on. There's people listening here. You know, they may hold this against you.
No. That was, but my transition into journalism, I fell on it. Because when I went to MCC for 2 years and then transferred on to St. John Fisher, but I didn't necessarily know that I would end up in this business. I was a barber for probably 17 years, and probably 10 years into that, I decided I always enjoyed the conversations that I would hear from my clients and talking to people. So it was kind of like that information gathering, and I enjoyed writing like short stories and things of that nature. So when I got into the communication program over at St. John Fisher, it just started to click and make sense.
We're talking about the future of local journalism. And before I get to the phones and some of your online comments, and I've got a pile of them, I just want to hit this one other point on J schools to find out what the panel says about some of the comments that have been made recently in the discussion on what would you tell aspiring journalists? What would you tell young journalists? Here's Ezra Klein. Don't go to journalism school. He writes, quote, "You're better off just interning or writing a blog or reading think tank papers. When I hire, I see J school experience as neutral. It doesn't separate one resume from another in the least. And a lot of journalism schools teach bad habits and make you pay for the privilege of learning them." He then refers students to read Michael Lewis's legendary takedown of J schools called J School Confidential. This goes back to 1993. You read it today, it still feels relevant. And Michael Lewis writes, quote, "Journalism schools are not alone in their attempts to dignify a trade by tacking onto it the idea of professionalism and laying it over a body of dubious theory. After all, McDonald's Hamburger U now trains beverage technicians. But the journalist's role is precisely to cut through this sort of obfuscation, not to create more of it. The best journalists are almost the antithesis of professionals. The horror of disrepute, the preternatural respect for authority, and the fear of controversy that so benefit the professional are absolute handicaps for a real journalist." That's Michael Lewis. And one other comment comes from Jonah Serra, who's an American business journalist and an author, columnist, writes for the New York Times. Jonah Serra writes, quote, "There is nothing I regret more than spending 2 years at the J School at Boston University. 2 years that could have been spent actually learning something or instead spent at a glorified trade school. I still recall with a shudder the 2 weeks spent learning how to write an obit, except that this trade school cannot possibly teach you what you need to learn because it is impossible to recreate the journalism environment in the classroom," end quote. Those are harsh commentaries of J school. You got 40% of this room who went to J schools. I'm going to start with you, Justin. You went to a J school. You agree with these or do you disagree?
I would not go to journalism school if you can think of a way to get into the business without it. I got an undergraduate degree in linguistics from the University of Chicago, which is kind of a eminently unuseful thing, and I worked as a linguist for a while, but I lost interest in it. And I thought I wanted to be a reporter, but I didn't really know how to do that. So I went to journalism school at Syracuse. It was helpful to me in that it hooked me up with an internship that then led to a job. So I wouldn't have been able to replicate that same career path without J-School. That being said, my ratio of student loans to salary is not what I wish it was. So I would say if you start young in high school or undergraduate and you can find a path of internships and a way to accumulate clips, then don't worry about J-School.
Okay. Veronica.
Having never been to J-School, I don't think I'm really very well equipped to answer this question, but I will say that my time spent not going to journalism school was time well spent. So I, you know, gathered a ton of amazing experience through internships and through, you know, mentoring, and I was also able to study new media in the process, which I think is, you know, has been helpful so far in giving me an edge and kind of working towards getting new audiences and working with this new technology that I think is so such a big part of journalism today. So.
Everybody seems to agree, whatever you do, you've got to have some hands-on. You've got to find a way to carve out hands-on experience, and that's often up to the student. I find that to be, even now doing an adjunct work at Nazareth, I find that up to the students to see how motivated they are to go out and find it. Gary Craig, you didn't go to a journalism school, but you've taught some classes.
Yes.
What do you say to these hard critiques of J-Schools?
Oddly enough, I actually teach in the criminal justice program, not journalism,
okay.
So oddly enough. Similarly, I, having not gone to one, I'm not sure how well-versed I am, but oddly, you know, just what you read there, he was sort of cursing the learning how to write an obituary and spend a lot of time on that. Actually, I can see a value in that. I mean, I'm hoping journalism schools are doing things like making sure you know how to fact check, making sure you know what sort of the ethical thresholds are, et cetera. And yes, you do learn those on the job, but if somebody's coming out of journalism school, hopefully that's already a foundation of what it is they know.
I agree with that, and I would say that having gone to a journalism school myself, I remember the so-called ivory tower classes, the ethics, the law classes, and as much as I think it takes a good presenter, a good professor who can deliver that those lessons well, but they're valuable and they're needed. I meet a lot of young people, especially when I was at in the television side. I'd meet people on scenes, and a public spokesperson would come out and say, "Hey, you're not allowed to be here." And some journalists turn and just walk right away, as if, mm-hmm. Wait, hold on a second here. You can't tell us this. You know, sometimes people don't know the law, and there's value in that. And sometimes you do learn it in the classroom. Obviously, if you don't learn in the classroom, you will learn it the hard way on the street, right, Gary?
Oh, exactly. And that's a great example there. I think it's interesting. I mean, again, having done this for a long time, I make phone calls to people, when I first got in the business, I was like, oh, gosh, well, if I call them, will they ever talk to me? Will I even get them on the line? And, of course, the longer you do it, the more you realize that almost anybody is accessible. And you just learn these things throughout, going to the crime scene, as you mentioned. Some people might get there, run into some sort of human barrier and think, okay, I'm done, I'm going home. There's nothing for me to do here, but that's not the case.
Carlette, what do you tell people about J-School? Again, your experience so interesting. You ended up with years completely apart from journalism. You end up back in journalism, but you do have some schooling in journalism. Is there value in J-School?
I think there is some value in it. I think it can provide a foundation, just as you mentioned, with the ethics and laws. And there are certain things that I still recall from those classes, whether it's the law or I started out writing for the college. I did a little stint with the college newspaper and just obits and things like that. So I think it provides a good foundation, but you definitely need to get an internship, or there has to be some application, because there is a difference from the textbook than when you're actually out in the field and you have to apply those skills. It's a bit different. So I think J-School is helpful, but definitely get your hands in there and get out there and try to get interviews.
I take Joe Nocera's point that he says it's impossible to recreate the journalism environment in a classroom. My response to that is, having adjuncted now for 8 weeks, which is not enough time, not a big enough sample size to really know. But what's interesting is, teaching digital storytelling as I am, I'm finding I come home from class and I think I've got to do a better job at creating these scenarios, or finding ways to make it as real as you can. And I think creative professors can do a pretty good job of that. I'm not saying there's any substitute for real world experience, but I also wouldn't dismiss it out of hand. Maybe I'm biased because I went to a J-School. Let me get to the phones and grab a call from Janice. Go ahead, Janice.
Oh, hi. It's Janice. in Pittsburgh, and I actually have a couple questions. I first thought I'd mention I was a journalist previously, and in terms of the J schools, that one additional value of that of the J school education could be ethics. I did not go to journalism school, but it seems to me, especially now when there are a lot of gray areas in terms of opinion and how to use sources and who you talk to and what position you take, that ethics probably would be of some value. But my questions were directly or mostly for the people who've more recently joined the business, and I was curious about what your job searches were like, and then to Justin specifically, how you ended up with, I want to say newspaper, although I know it's moving away from print, how you ended up in that business, which is in probably a larger state of transition than all of them.
Thank you, Janice. Justin, you want to start there?
Yeah, well, I ended up in the newspaper because I wanted to be a writer and I wanted to live in Rochester, and that seemed like the way to do it. The funny thing that I say tell people who think about getting into print journalism in particular is that while it's true that it's a very unsettled business right now and there are layoffs at a lot of different papers, that also opens up a lot more opportunities as people are moving around or thinking of different careers or as businesses are restructuring. That opens up new positions. Editors, I think, and publishers are particularly interested in finding new blood with new skills, that sort of thing. I think that was a point in my favor when I was hired at the DNC 3 years ago. But I got into newspapers because I wanted to be a reporter and a writer.
Did you interview other places? Did it seem like there were a lot of possibilities when you were going through your search?
Well, I had a sort of a predetermined career path. I started out at a newspaper in Auburn called The Citizen. I was there for about 2 years. That's after I had interned there when I was at Syracuse Journalism School. And then living in Auburn, I grew up in the Rochester area, so it had been my intention to get back here. So I kind of had a very specific focus on getting to Rochester. But I will say that in the 5 years or so that that I've been a newspaper reporter, I have spoken with or heard from other newspapers who are hiring or going through different transitions. And it seems clear to me that if that's the job that you want, those jobs are out there.
Janice, thanks for the call. And I'm seeing a lot of comments online, especially from members of the media, about the way things have changed. Caleb wants to know, should we pay attention to the 24-hour news cycle at all? Would wise news consumers step back and only read weeklies or monthlies? It's an interesting question from Caleb because as the media has changed, it's supposed to be, or at least there's so much competition to be first, to be immediate, to immediately get things online, on Twitter, etc. Caleb is saying, in the haze of all of that, is the real news found in a broader view and not in this sort of manic hour to hour, etc.? It's an interesting question. Veronica?
I would absolutely say yes. And, I think that with the democratization of journalism happening through the internet, I think that this gives us a really good opportunity to step back from that 24-hour barrage of news. And if you want to sign up for a weekly newsletter and just get the highlights, or it really gives people an opportunity to give the news more perspective, I think, which is really definitely important.
Gary?
I agree. I think the 24/7 broadcast world, as maddening as it can be at times, though, there is some benefit to it. And once you've learned to filter, I think, and to know what are reliable sources, whether you're getting it via Twitter or some other source, and you kind of know how to separate the wheat from the chaff, there is some beauty there in being able to sort of know, I guess I'm thinking more like breaking news events or et cetera, kind of where to turn and where to look for sort of a good analysis on the spot. I mean, I agree that for a much more sort of solid, substantive analysis, it's better to wait a little while and see what's out there. But I also still kind of see the beauty of the kind of instantaneous news cycle.
Sure. And let me toss an idea out there and see if Carlette agrees, because Carlette, again, used to be at WXXI. She's at 13WAM TV. I used to be at 13WAM TV. Here I am at WXXI. I see a difference in sort of approaches to what people value as news consumers. At WXXI, we cover more issues. And commercial television news covers more incidents. And I don't say this in a way that's reductive or meaning to be denigrating, because there's plenty of value in that. There's plenty of, we don't often at WXXI, there's got to be a good reason for us to cover a car accident. How's that? Yes. And or rarely will we cover the fact that it's snowing a couple of inches in the morning. But those are serving different functions. I think incidents are hour to hour, day to day. Issues are maybe week to week, month to month, to Caleb's question. It just depends on what you are looking for as a consumer. How do you see it?
I see it just the way that you pointed out, which is the difference here at XXI. I mean, you can take an issue and you have time to delve into it, explain it, why, where does it come from, how, and that kind of things. And yeah, on the commercial and in television, it's just the who, what, when, where, how, why. Like, just get it out there. And I think that it's good, because you're telling people, okay, boom, this is what happened. Maybe this is what you need to look out for. How does this impact you on the short term? And then the next day or two or three, you know, you can delve into it more.
Yeah, and by the way, to be fair to all of our colleagues in commercial television who may be listening, that's not to say commercial television only covers incidents.
No,
commercial television will cover incidents and issues.
Exactly.
We cover more issues in more time, but fewer incidents. That's just sort of the way it is.
And they're different models, you know.
But you seem to be enjoying it. It really puts a lot of pressure on you to be a very good storyteller. 90 seconds, tell me a good story. And that's a little different, isn't it?
Oh, it's very much different, yeah. And so they're two different skill sets, and, you know, I'm learning how to adapt to that, because opposed to public broadcasting, I mean, you can take 5 minutes to tell it. In commercial, yeah, it's a minute 30 or minute 15 and get it across. So it's, you know, bare bones, but it's getting it out there, and I think that they both serve good purposes. It's just what the listener or viewer is looking for at the particular time.
And, you know, I think it's worth pointing out on that topic that the horse is already out of the barn in terms of the 24-hour news cycle. If we were to all of a sudden kind of decide on a industry-wide slowdown and, you know, roll that back somehow, I don't think we'd have food on our table for very long.
I agree. And this parallels, in a weird way, a conversation we had last week on this program about human extinction. I know it's how does it parallel?
Or no, not.
when we talk about, let's say we decide, and I'm not saying we're making this decision, but let's say we decide that this manic 24-hour news cycle has some deleterious effects. The second somebody says, okay, we're going to try to be a little, you know, slower, a little bit more length of content, somebody else jumps in to fill the void and kick you when you're down. I think that's part of what I'm seeing. Justin's saying, you want to step back and you're not going to have food on your table because it'll be viewed as weak. Someone will knock you down. It's the same way when we were talking about carbon emissions. It's like, well, the United States could say, hey, we're going to reduce carbon emissions by 40% in a decade. It'll hurt. It's the right thing to do. China and India would say, see ya, suckers, and kick you when you're down.
And not only kick you when you're down, but I think that it gets to a point about what people want versus what they say they want. And at the DNC, we've had a lesson in this lately, because we've got some really interesting metrics that can tell us a lot of stuff about not only bare bones facts, like how many people are clicking on our stories, but how much time they're spending on a story, where they're coming from, where they're going afterward. And we're finding something that I think maybe people have known for a long time, which is that the stories that people say that they want you to do, the long, in-depth things, the analysis of the issues, they actually don't read those very much. And there's other things that they read that maybe you wouldn't have thought that they would, that they do in fact spend a lot of time on. So I think that rather than, pining for the time that you know, Gary and I could write 4,000-word opus on whatever it is that we want, we need to accept that challenge of recognizing what people want, recognizing what in our independent judgment we think is important news, and whatever that means, and putting those together in a way that pleases everybody.
Let me get a 60-second break in. Allison in Rochester, we're coming to you next on the phones. More of your comments on Twitter. And I will also remind our listeners that our panel here has diverse experience, but I didn't invite Gary Craig because he's the oldest guy in the panel. I invited you because you may be the best journalist I know.
Well, that's very kind.
And when I come back, I want to ask Gary in his position, this idea that, look, we can't stop time. We're all going to get older, and our medium will change. How do we adapt as opposed to hanging on for dear life and saying, well, it's better the old way? Because I think even if you think it's better the old way is not coming back. So let's take a 60-second break, your phone calls, and more of a discussion on where news is going in Rochester and beyond next. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connections. We're talking the future of journalism, advice for young journalists, and what we think our medium, our industry, looks like going into the future in Rochester. Gary Craig and Justin Murphy from the Democrat and Chronicle are here. Carlette Claire from 13 WHAM News and Veronica Volk from WXXI News. And on the phone is Allison in Rochester. Go ahead, Allison.
Hi. This is a little bit different, but I think it relates. Last summer, heard AR, Alternative Radio, which is a very popular program for me, and heard Jeff Cohen, who was hired originally, I think he came from the national broadcasting area, by the Parks Foundation, which funded a new center at Ithaca College for alternative media. And I wondered if any of the classes that are now taught in traditional journalism classes you would categorize as classes in what we would call alternative.
Well, good classes will cover it. They have to. I mean, that's my first response there, Allison. Alternative media might not yet rival the earning power for its adherents and its practitioners, but we are terribly unwise to think that there are only traditional forms of media going forward. So it's a great question, but let me kind of kick it around the table. And Carlette, alternative media, I mean, it's so easy to get locked into your job day to day. What would you tell young journalism students about sort of the diversification of platforms and possibilities?
I would say try it out. I mean, I think that we don't know where journalism obviously is going to end up.
That's right.
So why not try out different avenues to see what works? I mean, the one thing that my father always used to tell me is you never know unless you try. And even if you try it and it doesn't work out, at least you tried it. You know that doesn't work. Or you might look up on something and say, this could be another avenue for which we could disseminate information, or this is, you know, the next move of where journalism might be. So I just say explore opportunities.
100 years ago, Columbia journalism professors thought that by the end of the 20th century, you'd need a license to practice journalism the same way you do medicine. That never happened. And with alternative media, the bar is low. And the nice thing is, I think the free market does a pretty good job figuring out who's doing it well. And some people, Justin Murphy, are doing really good actual news gathering and journalism, even if they're not at a traditional source. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. And I think that having the access and the will to actually gather the news, I think it's important not only to have experimentation on different platforms, but the thing that really separates somebody who considers himself a true journalist from just somebody out there talking is that you need to have the expertise and the commitment to whatever the topic is that you're working on. And once you get to that, then, you know, we often say at the newsroom, our stories have always been in print. We've always, you know, seen them printed in the newspaper. But to us, it's really all the same if somebody's getting it online or in some other way. That part of it is less important, and where we and journalists should be, I think, open to change in that arena. But really the important thing is that whatever your platform is, you need to know your stuff.
I agree, and this is where alternative forms of media have given some great opportunities for people who specialize in certain things. Because one of the pratfalls of the news media, I think, in recent years is as you downsize, you have less of an opportunity to specialize. Now, when I was at Channel 13, for example, I don't know anybody who covered the courts like Sean Carroll. You know, Mike Ziegler at the Democrat and Chronicle was like that, but Sean Carroll had sources everywhere. He was absolutely remarkable. Mm-hmm. And that is so important to have somebody specializes in covering City Hall, somebody specializes in covering healthcare, somebody specializes, I think, beats matter. And so what I'd say to young journalists is if you have a passion for any subject matter that gets covered, even alternative media gives you a chance to potentially find a home for it. What do you think, Gary?
Oh, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And as you said, I mean, the alternative media sometimes has kind of a probably back when we're talking about years ago, sort of a narrow definition, actually. But now alternative media, the choices are much more widespread. I mean, there's so many different, just to use the term loosely, alternatives to mainstream media to look for job opportunities. And that, as Justin was saying earlier, I mean, wherever you can go to sort of build a portfolio, to build your clips, to build your audio, to build your videos, whatever, that's possibly the way to go do it, instead of just sort of thinking, okay, I'm going to, the MSM, I'm going to step into the mainstream media right away. If there are other options, look for those.
How have you adjusted to the changing face, Gary, as you have worked in this field for more than 3 decades, and sometimes the temptation is to resist change, and sometimes that change comes at a price that you think sometimes quality, sometimes efficiency in many ways. What do you do as a journalist to say, this is the field I'm in, I have to embrace it? Give me your mindset.
Well, I mean, the core is always going to be the core. Get it right, tell it in a way that it's going to engage people, whether it be, whatever the kind of story, whether it be investigative, whether it be something heartwarming, whether it be something light or tragic. I mean, that's always going to be the core and the foundation. The delivery models, obviously, I've had to adjust to. Some I haven't adjusted to well. I'm supposed to do videos. I've been, not very good at doing them. I'm sure my bosses would agree with that. I sit in the courtroom. I try to tweet a courtroom. I'm not quite as fast on the, on the phone as are many others. So when I'm covering a trial soon that I think they're probably going to want tweeting, I've had to tell them, look, if you want this tweeted regularly, you better find somebody else to go sit in the courtroom and do it, because I'm going to be sitting with my notepad, because that's the way. But that isn't to say that I don't find ways to adapt. And I think you can find those ways while still kind of being true, not only being true to what you do, but being basically not trying to take on something that you're utterly incapable of doing sometimes. You can still find ways to sort of harness. I'm active on Twitter, not tweeting out events so much, but just sort of conversationally. And there's so many options to kind of harness what's new and to sort of, I admit, the new word kind of in our world this day is brand, and I admit I'm uncomfortable with that word. Else would that work?
I am too.
but it's, to sort of carve out your brand and to get what it is that people sort of come to you for, and whatever it is they think that you may be a person who offers a good perspective. There's, I think, many more opportunities and alternatives to do that now and to find ways to do that than there's ever been as long as I've been in the business.
Before I get to the phones, then, let me ask the newspaper writers one more question. And I didn't invite them to overly scrutinize recent changes, but let me ask you, based on what I've seen reported on about the restructuring and changes at the Democrat and Chronicle, I think there are content coaches now, and I'm sure those are really good people doing the work, but is that something you're comfortable with, Gary?
Yeah, sometimes we rename things and call it innovation.
right.
I would argue that a content coach at the end of the day is going to be a good editor. And that's,
yeah,
if
that's a good point.
If that's what they're doing. I will admit, I'm not sure if management would want me to admit, but I do worry. We've had layoffs. The rest of the business has had layoffs. That's not new. That you do kind of reach a point where it's getting hard to get the work done. And especially, the time to really jump full throttle into innovation, maybe while you've got the huge staffing that we had 20 years ago. It's a lot harder when the staffing is thin, and we're not alone in that. That's the newspaper industry, to suddenly decide we're going to reinvent our world overnight. And that does come with some stumbles and some difficulties internally. And I think, deny that is just to deny it without facing the facts.
Justin?
We've got two issues that we're working through, and not just us, but everyone. One is that we're trying to do a fundamentally different thing. We're doing our job in a different way, and that's hard, especially because we don't know exactly what the new way is or should be. And the second thing is that we're doing that with fewer people. So to handle either one of those challenges might be hard, but could be done. To do them both simultaneously is quite difficult. I think Gary and I were talking about this earlier. For whether it's the DNC or Gannett or any other newspaper chain, it's not hard to find things that are going wrong or that could be done better. But it is hard to point anywhere else at somebody who's navigating all of these shoals perfectly. It's not an easy thing. So I think that not all the changes that we recently went through have been going perfectly, and I think that management and certainly us reporters and people in the newsroom are aware of that, but some of them have been, and I think that to say that we all just want to curl back up in our cocoon of 1970s newspapers or whatever, that's, like we've been saying, that's just not going to happen.
Let me get a phone call in. This is Wyatt in Pittsford. Go ahead, Wyatt.
I'm calling less because I spent 30 years on local TV and radio, but more because I heard you say you're teaching as an adjunct. I spent 10 years teaching ethics and media writing at SUNY Brockport. And the two things that struck me over those 10 years that I found troubling, at least for the people who wanted to take over for you and me, is A, that they had very little idea what they were passionate about. One of their last assignments every semester was to write about something they were passionate about, and 25% of every class had no idea what they were passionate about. And the other one was that they had very little idea of what boundaries they might have. I asked them to bring in a copy of something they thought was objectionable, something that would make them turn the channel. And they always brought in something that I would find objectionable, but they had no boundaries themselves. And I think we're finding that in a lot of the things that we're reading about these days, in particular with what's happened with Kurt Schilling on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Well, I take the point on, especially on passion. I mean, Gary made that point earlier, and I think the whole panel has echoed the notion that if you're getting into journalism now, you better be getting into journalism because you love it. And the nice thing is that the standards do stay the same. To me, the ship will sink if we see such a change that being right doesn't matter as much anymore. It mattered to Brian Williams. It should matter to Bill O'Reilly, and which tells you a lot about him, by the way, that it doesn't seem to matter, which is a whole other conversation. But I think about, you talk about alternative media that tries to push the boundaries. A few years ago, the late David Carr interviewed the people from Vice. And they were boasting on some. Gary, you nodding? If you haven't seen the video, there's a video of the interview, which is fabulous. And David Carr puts them in their place a little in a way that says, tell me your story, but don't you come into my office and denigrate what we do, because our standards still matter. As much as people dog the media, there are still some remarkable journalists. And most organizations are still doggedly devoted to the truth, or the facts out there. And I thought David Carr offered a great defense. So look up that video of David Carr sitting down with the guys from Vice, and you will see a grizzled veteran kind of pushing back a little bit.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, actually, because David Carr was, he had such optimism about the business, and he was such a champion for young journalists, and he thought he knew the ship would write itself.
And he taught, by the way.
Yes.
Yes. You're absolutely right.
I think another important thing to note about, for somebody who might be thinking about getting into journalism, we've had a lot of people at the DNC, even in the short time I've been there, who took that job maybe early out of college and realized after 6 months it wasn't for them. But that time, it wasn't wasted, because they learned how to write clearly, they learned how to communicate, they learned how to listen to people and ask questions and analyze data. So it's not like you'd be jumping down some kind of endless rabbit hole if you got into it and it turned out not to be your thing.
Carlette Claire, for students in journalism who might not realize the hardest part about the business right now is what?
I would say, it's multitasking.
Multitasking.
Well, at least for me.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be able to do a number of things all at the same time. Now in television, you might be shooting your own video, editing your own video, but you have to still interview, know what's going on, who your sources are, tweeting, Facebook, social media. So there's all these different things. So it's being multifaceted. You want to learn as many platforms as you can, because it makes yourself a little bit more marketable and valuable. So I would say some of those things are beginning to be something they should look into.
Being proficient in a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Diversify your skill sets early on, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. Gary Craig, Felix Salmon wrote about the fact that we cannot predict what's going to exist. We've talked about that this hour. When we talk about newspapers, we cannot predict what's going to exist. Should that deter journalists from getting into the business?
Oh, not at all. It's whatever the delivery mechanism, the demand is going to be there. It may be different than print, but the demand is going to be there for storytelling, for content that you can judge to be reliable, to be accurate, to be factual. You know, that has never gone away for centuries, and it's not going to go away for centuries to come.
Veronica Volk, do you get the sense, moving into public radio as you have, that you are in one of the safest media sort of forts right now?
I absolutely do. Yeah. I was going to say, in response to that question earlier, I found my job on a Twitter hashtag, PubJobs. And, you know, it's a really great network to be in. My specific problem is trying to get people of a certain age to listen to me. So
interesting.
20-somethings, namely.
You want more 20-somethings? But I think that seems to be shifting. Maybe I'm just an optimist.
It's getting there, maybe.
Very interesting. Justin Murphy, any last words for aspiring journalists out there from your own experience, having fought through, and you've got a job that a lot of people would want now.
Yeah.
What would you tell people?
I would say not to despair too much. I think it's easy to get wrapped up in the moment. But as I said before, every age of journalism has come with job insecurity and anxiety and uncertainty about what the future is going to hold. I've got a friend I was talking to a while ago, and he was kind of embarrassed because there was a large local story that he had never heard of that you'd think he should have. And you think, well, he's one of those millennials that doesn't pay attention to everything. But he actually said, you know, I read a ton of news, actually. So that's not quite true. The demand is out there.
My last bit of advice, especially for students and aspiring journalists, is become as good a writer as you can, because a lot of your classmates and peers are writing in ways that are a lot more shorthand and a lot less proficient at the craft. And if you can become a great writer, you can differentiate. That's what I would tell people. Great panel this hour. Justin Murphy and Gary Craig from the Democrat and Chronicle. Thank you, gentlemen. Great to have you here.
Thank you.
And I hope all of our listeners are checking out their work. Veronica Volk, we always check out your work. It's great to have you at WXXI. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Carlette, even though we miss you, we love watching you on 13 WHAM TV.
Thanks, Evan.
Great to have you back in the old digs. I'm Evan Dawson. Thanks for listening to Member Supported Public Radio.